Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Green Tech Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Coming up on Green Tech Today, cool your roof along with your neighborhood. The best tech DIY projects this side of the Mississippi, that side too, and green tech gadget guinea pigs. That's us. All that and more on Green Tech Today.
This episode of Green Tech Today is brought to you by the Ecomagination Challenge from GE. GE and its partners are awarding $200 million to ideas that help build the next generation power grid for the 21st century. For more information and to submit your ideas and innovations, go to www.challenge.ecomagination.com and make sure you mention TWiT.
Welcome to Green Tech Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Dr. Kiki.
And this is the show, green show for the eco-minded geek.
It is, and that's you.
Yes.
Did you know? It's you.
We coined that term because we were like, well, we're geeks, and we're eco-minded, and you probably are too, but maybe you need a little direction on how to be one, and so we're here to learn and learn with you and teach you a thing or two and have a little fun while we're at it.
Fun's the key thing.
So what's been up this last week? What have you been up to?
Well, I was in search of summer.
Oh, yeah, right. San Francisco.
Yeah.
Fogtown.
Fogtown.
We're not seeing a lot of summer. Not the last week, anyway. It's not even really warm today.
Right. But in many areas, it's very sunny. It's hot. People are using their air conditioners. And they're spending money on their electric bills. So I climbed up on my roof this weekend to follow up on a story having to do with changing the color of your roof to save your wallet and the planet at the same time. How many of you like to take in the view from your rooftop? And if you do, what do you see? If you live in a city like I do, probably a lot more roofs. Roofs and roads account for 50 to 60% of ground cover in urban areas. Now, that's a majority share. These dark roofs and roads absorb a lot of heat from the sun. This heat builds up, increasing the overall temperature of the area, and in cities can lead to what is called the urban heat island effect, in which the city is hotter than the areas around it. Dark roofs, like mine, can absorb up to 90% of the sunlight that hits them during a sunny day. That can get them to reach temperatures in excess of 150 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot. I brought an infrared thermometer up on my roof to see just how hot it got on one of the few sunny days in San Francisco's summer. So let's take a look. 122 degrees Fahrenheit. That's really hot. But it is possible to get a cooler roof. The Department of Energy has recently published guidelines on how you can use modern roofing technologies to achieve the cool roof that you desire. The key factors that influence a roofing material's ability to be cool are solar reflectance and thermal emittance. Solar reflectance is how much light the material reflects. Whatever isn't reflected gets absorbed as heat. Thermal emittance is a measure of how much heat is released by a material. A hot tin roof, for example, is not a good emitter. If you are interested in comparing your current roof to a similar roof with cool materials, the EPA has created an online calculator that's pretty easy to use. And the DOE has made a calculator that's useful for estimating heating and cooling savings for flat, non-black roofs. Additionally, the DOE and EPA have created other websites, like this Energy Star site, to help you find the best products for your roof. In the United States, we spend $40 billion on air conditioning alone. Cooler roofs can reduce energy bills by reducing our needs for air conditioning, cooling indoor spaces, and reducing roof temperatures.
If you use a white roof and you happen to have air conditioning, depending on the geometry of the building, you can save 10, as much as 15% decrease in energy by just simply having a white roof.
They can also benefit the environment by reducing local air temperatures, which improves air quality and slows smog formation.
If you replace all the building roofs today with white roofs, and you go to cement-style pavement instead of blacktop-style pavement, it would be a reflection of the sunlight back into space that would be the equivalent as if you took off all the automobiles of the world for 11 years.
According to the DOE, studies show that in warm or hot climates, substituting a cool roof for a conventional roof can reduce the annual air conditioning energy use of a single-story building by up to 15%. Cool interior spaces in buildings that don't have air conditioning, making occupants more comfortable. Reduce carbon emissions by lowering the need for fossil fuel-generated electricity to run air conditioners. Reduce peak demand for electricity, helping to lower costs and avoid power outages. And finally, potentially slow global warming. Of course, this won't work for everyone everywhere, but if you are in the right areas, this might be something worth looking into.
So, somewhere like San Francisco, I mean, we discussed before, it's not very sunny here today, and it's really not warm in the summers in general. I mean, are we in a good enough place to go through this whole process?
San Francisco itself might not be the best location, but the Central Valley, areas like Fresno, Bakersfield, Stockton, the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, you know, you're looking, and Florida, you know, you're looking at high sun areas
right.
that it would really make a major impact.
Cool. Well, good to know. If you're in one of those areas, maybe you want to go white.
Maybe. But
what if people don't like white roofs?
You don't have to. There are new techie materials that are reflective in the right ways and emittive in the right ways, and you can go black, gray, brown, red, all sorts of colors. You don't have to go white to go green.
Cool. Love that. Well, if you want more information on Kiki's story, where do we go? twit.tv/GTT. I'm still learning that. I'm still getting used to that.
Get it down.
What's our website?
twit.tv/GTT. And if you have any segment suggestions, just send us an email. greentechtoday@twit.tv.
Be right back.
We're partnering with four of the biggest venture capital firms in the clean energy space, three in the U.S., one in Europe. Again, we think that the combination of GE investment and venture capital investment is going to allow us to increase innovation. It's going to allow us to accelerate new ideas. It puts us shoulder to shoulder with some of the smartest tech investors, and we can use what I would call the industrial clout of GE to bring technologies to this marketplace faster.
GE announced its challenge at a San Francisco event along with its four venture capital partners: Emerald Technology Ventures, Foundation Capital, Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers, and Rockport Capital Partners have all joined with GE. Ideas from companies and individuals can be entered through the ecoimagination.com website for the next 10 weeks. So check out ecoimagination.com.
Kiki, I had an idea.
What's that?
Why don't we go over this last week's stories, stuff that's been going on in the news, and stuff we think's worth talking about. Not necessarily what happened yesterday, but more of an overall trend. What's going on in the green tech world? What do you say?
I think it's a great idea.
So, I'm glad you said that, because I have
what am I going to say? No.
I have a new vacation spot that I really want to visit, and it's in Sweden. Nice. Just about 40 miles south of the Arctic Circle, in fact. So it's northern Sweden. It's way up there. And it's called the Tree Hotel. And the reason I want to go there so badly is because it's literally a hotel that has been built into a tree forest.
But
it's boreal forest.
But it's not a tree house, per se.
No, it's like a really nice hotel. But the way that they built it, they kind of had this philosophy. The architects and the business folks behind this hotel kind of said, listen, we want a place that's eco-minded but very technological and sleek place for people to go and get away from it all, and it's in a beautiful part of the world, but we don't want to disrupt the beautiful place that we're in. So, you know, normally for hotels, you clear cut a big area and you run a bunch of pipes and there's this whole disruptive nature of the whole thing. This hotel, as you can see, I mean, these are like glass cubes built into the trees themselves. So it's built around the forest, within the forest, instead of the forest. And I love this.
Yeah, and the way the materials on the outside of these cubes in the trees look, it reflects the forest, the trees, the sky, the clouds.
Everything. I mean, you don't even see this stuff. It's very, very unobtrusive. And one of the things that I knew that you would worry about, because you're such a bird lover.
The poor birds.
What about the birds? They're going to run into it. I mean, it's like the most heartbreaking thing when a bird runs into a window. You know, you just want to cry
smack.
And cry. Oh, it's the worst.
So sad.
So you're building a hotel that's designed to confuse the birds. That's just terrible, right? Well, it turns out that there's actually a film that's covering these cubes, these hotel rooms, mm-hmm. the hotel itself, that's visible to birds. The birds are kind of like, oh, I don't know. This is not the sky. I want to avoid this. But yeah. humans don't know the difference.
Right. It's a great use of technology. What they've done is they've created a film that reflects light in the wavelength that birds can see, but not humans, because birds have this extra photoreceptor, so they can see in an extra spectrum of light.
It's so awesome.
Awesome, but it doesn't bother us, so we don't see it. The birds see it. The birds don't run into the window. Happy birds.
So it sort of remains to be seen how ecological this hotel is really going to be, you know, throughout, because for a long time, this was a concept a lot of people said can't be done. This is a terrible idea. It's built. People can go and book their vacations there now. This is a real thing. It exists. I guess maybe we should go to Sweden and see for ourselves.
You know? I'm
all
for it.
Are they using recycled sheets on the beds? I don't know about that yet. But at least the idea, the concept, I'm a thumbs up so far.
Yeah, so if you'd like us to take a vacation in Sweden, send your donations.
PayPal? I've got PayPal.
I'll take it.
That'd be great. Thanks. moving on from hotels to poop.
Oh, of
That's
course.
A segue. This is new to me, that nanotech makes poop power more efficient. Engineers up at Oregon State University are working on getting energy from actual sewage, which sounds disgusting, but it's neat because they've made a discovery. What happens is you can boost electricity production by applying nanoparticle coating to the anodes in fuel cells that turn poop, for lack of a better word, into currents and increase production nearly 20-fold.
Right.
I read the article and I went, wow, okay, this makes sense. It's just nothing that I ever would have thought of. It turns out that one of the main researchers on this project apparently was changing her son's diapers and sort of went like, well, this is not a pretty unpleasant activity. I'm not really enjoying myself all that much. I wonder if there's anything I could do to harness energy this way. And thus an idea was born.
Yeah, and this is something that has been not necessarily this particular way. This is new, using nanotech to get more current out of the waste. But turning sewage into energy is something that has been explored for a while now. And so it's just great to be seeing it get better and better.
Yeah. I mean, waste is going to be there whether we use it constructively or not, right?
Let's use it.
If there's a way to recycle the waste that is going to be there anyway, I'm all for it. I have to say, I feel a little sorry for the people who are working on site because it's got to be pretty stinky.
It's waste. The bacteria, they're producing some nice gas, I'm sure.
It's just the reality. And I applaud the scientists who are taking one for the team on this one.
Yeah, in this case, the nanoparticles, they're made of gold. So it's maybe a little expensive at this point, and mm-hmm. maybe they can find a different material that might work a little bit better and be a little more cost effective.
But this isn't the only instance of poop being used in a good way. Is that right?
That's right. There's a researcher in the UK. He's a student at De Montfort University in Leicester, and he's created a power generator that's powered by the flushing of poo or water draining out of your sink or your tub when you're using it. He started looking at or hearing water drain out of his tub one evening and was like, wow, that's a lot of force.
Mm-hmm.
It's just draining through there. What could I do? And so he came up with this idea of putting a little spin wheel that powers a generator that then creates electricity. So every time you flush, every time you let water drain down the sink or the tub, you are creating energy if you were to install something like this. And it's possible. They've made some estimates that if you were to install these systems in, say, a 7-story building or a hotel or something, you might actually be able to save upwards of $1,000 per year.
Hmm. So it's all, yeah, I love the idea of a student. Where'd you say he was? From
the UK.
Somewhere in the UK. So, you know, he's in a good place. Smart kid. I love the idea of someone going, well, wait a second. There's a force happening, right? Every time mm-hmm. I have to get rid of waste, what else could I use with this energy? It's great.
Right.
I love it.
I think it's great. There are a lot of ideas like this popping up, and it's just neat to see things potentially be put into use. There's still a lot of questions as to how applicable it is to all buildings, to all flushing situations, you know, and will the poo build up if it's in the way? Well, you know, how often do you have to clean it? How are you going to clean it? Mm-hmm. There are some questions that need to be answered still.
All right. Well, we'll stay on the poo story and keep you updated.
Yeah.
As we learn more. Poo detectives here. A story that we were talking about last week or the week before on TNT, a show that we both co-host on regularly, yep, with Tom Merritt here on the TWiT Network, mm-hmm, is the idea that e-books have become so popular that they're now outselling traditional books, at least in places like Amazon. In fact, Amazon is an example of e-books outselling regular books by about 50% now.
Right, hardcover books especially. Right. So hardcovers are usually the first printing. Mm-hmm. They're more expensive than paperbacks.
Right.
And if you're going to buy an e-book over an actual hardcover book, maybe you're going to save some money, save some trees for sure.
Right.
Maybe that's why they're becoming more popular.
Well, and it's easier to store. You know, it's, mm-hmm, it's
not so big.
Over the years, I love books. In fact, it's interesting because I feel like this is one of those situations where I'm like, am I finally this old person who can't really grasp the way that the world is going? Because
maybe,
for a long time, I've really pushed back on the whole idea of e-books. It's like, I want my book. I like the way it feels. I like the way the paper feels. I like the way they smell. And that's just what I enjoy. You know, I usually read at night, you know, for the last half hour of my day. And I don't like the idea all that much. Even if using my iPad, I've never gotten into the Kindle. There's just something wrong. But when you think of it in ways of, okay, well, listen, this technology is being adopted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much saving that's going to happen, not only in the printing of the shoes, but the storage, the not having bookcases all over my house. I mean, bookcases are a huge issue for me because they're always overflowing.
And if you move, the boxes are heavy and
the whole thing.
All sorts of issues.
Yeah.
On the other side, however, a good hardcover copy of a classic on, mm-hmm, your bookshelf. I mean, there are some books that you just... they're nice to have on the bookshelf, and they're pretty, and
right,
they're something you're going to keep forever. And
it's a
form of art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that it probably will eventually go the way of music. I haven't bought a physical copy of anything in a really long time. And I used to be, I was like a record store rat. I was there all the time. I loved those things.
Gotta have my vinyl.
I have finally I've turned the corner. But, you know, so what do we do? What do we do with this whole ebook revolution? I mean, do we just go, this is the way it's got to go? We're just going to have to change our habits?
I think it'll be selective for a while. I don't think this is something we have to do. I think people are going to, you know, choice is good.
Right.
And having the choice of how you want to consume your media, I think, is one of the most important things out there.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Ebooks, coming for you.
We're coming for you. Google... going into Google, Google, the big search engine internet powerhouse, who seems to be buying up everything on the web these days. They're moving further than just buying information. They're actually investing in energy these days.
Cool. So tell me more.
Yeah, it turns out that Google's nonprofit arm, Google.org, has invested in an Iowa wind farm that produces about 114 megawatts of energy. And they're looking at just taking that energy, putting it off the shelf, and being able to power their own data centers or even be able to sell it back to the market if they want to. So the question is Google going to start getting into the energy marketplace, or is this another step in their actually becoming closer and closer to carbon neutral?
Is Google really in a position to be able to invest in enough of wind power technology and the like to truly offset what they're also generating? It's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that.
Yeah, I honestly do think that they are on the path. This wind farm is one big step in that direction. They have fuel cells that power some of their data centers. You know, you add solar to their campus, and carbon credit trading is another area that they're probably looking into. All these things together can really add up and set them on that path, and
cool,
potentially create a model for other companies who might want to do the same thing.
Yeah, because if Google can do it, we all can.
Everyone. So can I.
You. So Google is a huge company, and they've got a lot of money and resources yep. to invest in this, and kudos to them. But what about you and me? And, you know, there's so many gadgets that are out on the market right now that are designed to, you know, be ecological and help us with this and that. But I do feel mm-hmm. like I experience green tech fatigue.
A lot of people do.
A lot of people do yeah. because we start to feel like we're getting marketed to, that a lot of the stuff is bunk and it's designed to sell units and not really help our lives. But that doesn't yeah. mean that everything is like that. I think you just kind of have to wade through the junk to find the gems. And so I decided... I thought I'd take one for our TWIT team and become the Green Tech Today guinea pig. Oh, hi! Welcome to Sarah's Kitchen. It's a wonderful place. It's where all the green tech happens in this house. I'm about to make some tea, and up until recently, I had a little bit of a problem. See, I get this really nice tea from Rainbow Grocery. It's the San Francisco Co-op. They have great loose green tea, and I've got my strainer, and I usually like to drink my tea out of my very favorite mug from UC Hastings, where I didn't go to school, but I still like the mug. Problem is that I know a little bit about tea. I know a thing or two. And the problem is that with tea like this, and this varies for different kinds of tea, once I add a little tea to my strainer, put it in my mug, you know, turn the gas on, you know, wait for it to get hot enough, put the water in the cup, and then let it steep, which means that's what soaking the leaves is called, steep, for 3 minutes or so. Usually by that time I've left, you know, about to burn my house down, I'm brushing my teeth. In any case, a lot of times I ruin the tea because I steep it too long and I forget about it. And I could set a timer or something, but that just gets complicated when you have a tea maker that does all this for you. This is the Breville tea maker, and I really love it, and I'm going to show you how it works. First, just fill up your tea maker with however much water you're going to need, whether it's 1 cup or 5 cups, kind of like a coffee maker. And then at this point, we sort of assemble the rest. So the water's here, but there's a few other steps. This is where my tea goes in. This is kind of my, it's kind of like my infuser, right? So it's the modern version of this guy. So I'm going to make a fair amount of tea. I've got friends coming over for brunch. That's not true. Now at this point, this little guy full of tea magnetically attaches to the top of the tea maker. Just kind of grabs it. It's really cool. And it just sort of sits in here waiting for the magic to begin. The only other thing you need to do, assembly-wise, is add the top of the tea maker. So we've got water, we've got tea hanging up at the top above the water, and everything's sealed, and now we're ready to get technical. When you make green tea, you should probably brew it at a temperature of about 175 Fahrenheit for about anywhere between 2 and 4 minutes, depending on how strong you like it. So over here on this button, I've picked strong, but I could do a custom or keep it mild. That's 2 minutes. Medium is 3, and so on. So over on the side where you pick your tea, I've picked green. I've got black, white, herbal, oolong, or custom as well. So if you've got some crazy kind of tea that no one's ever heard of, you can do your own brew time. But kind of the point of the Breville maker is to let it choose for you. So let's go green and strong, because I'm pretty tired right now. We're at 120 degrees. The water is heating up quickly. You can see the bubbles forming. It's very hot to the touch. It's getting warmer, and we're just plugged into the wall. We're at 170. Now, I want you to focus on the basket itself, because as soon as we hit 175, the magic happens. Okay, we've hit 175, and now, can you see this little guy? There's a little condensation, but I think you can. It's being lowered into the water all on its own through a magnetic force field. So this is my tea inside that little basket there being lowered into the water at 175 Fahrenheit. I'll tilt down here a little bit. The brew time has started, and it's just gonna count down from 4 minutes to 0. And now I have tea. And I've got my favorite cup. The tea is up and out of the way, and it's still in the strainer, so I can be safe to pour the tea without any actual leaves getting into my cup. Put the tea back on the warmer, where the rest of it will be safe until I'm ready to enjoy the rest. And then my morning gets better. Reminder, you guys, we want to hear from you. We've got an email address. We've got a website. You can call us or send us a video. All sorts of ways that you can send us ideas and feedback to make the show better.
That's right. So if you want to send us an email with any suggestion, feedback, question, that kind of thing, email us at greentechtoday@twit.tv. For that voicemail, just call us, 415-GT-TODAY. And if you're going to send us a video, make sure it's not really long because we don't have a lot of time in the show, but we do want to see your stuff. So
for sure.
30 seconds.
That's usually good. 30 seconds or less. Do a little dance. Whatever. We don't care.
Green Tech dance.
Right. Yeah. If you can send us our new choreographed Green Tech dance, that'd be helpful for our episode
awesome.
3. Thanks for that. So last week, I talked to CEO and founder of NeighborGoods.net, Mickey Krimmel, about the idea of sharing resources to cut down on unused items, which is a great idea. And I mean, it just makes sense, right? Which brings us to our kind of standout spotlight today for today's show, which is Make Magazine. Now, you may have already heard of Make Magazine. It's a quarterly magazine. It's also a great website, great resource for kind of everything DIY and tech related.
The maker community.
Exactly, the maker community. But it's also a great source of ideas for recycling technology to cut down on that waste. For example, within just an hour of browsing their website, I learned a bunch of stuff, like how to turn an old HP 540 printer into a 3D machine. I browsed the Make Flickr group, didn't even know that existed, but they have 6,400 members who post photos and videos of all sorts of reusable tech projects, from a bench made from old circuit boards, which is awesome, to the latest Altoid can inventions. Yeah, they're still doing that. And let's not forget, this is the best one of them all, the iDish. That would be using your iPad as a customizable sushi plate, of course. What else would I be talking about? Thanks to the ideas, Make. See, it's not just an all-in-one device. It's also a plate.
How useful.
By the way, the Twit Network packed up our bags and went to the first ever Detroit Maker Fair. That's sort of their maker convention that's around meeting other like-minded folks who have DIY projects. Some of these are like really large scale. I mean, they're really fun. So the Twit Network went to Detroit to actually participate in the Maker Fair. And so in next week's show, we'll have some highlights from that show.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see that.
Me either. That's it for this episode of Green Tech Today.
I know.
We're leaving so soon. Did it seem like it went by fast to you?
It did.
Good.
This is a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. If we're talking too much, you can let us know that too. I mean, there's so much to talk about, right? I mean, Green Tech is so, it's such a vast well of information. So we could go on and on, but it's probably enough for now.
Next week, we'll bring you more stuff.
Until then, I don't know. We don't have a slogan yet.